Hey, everyone out there, and thanks again for joining us here at ASAP Nowcast, the podcast for ASAP Now. For those of you new to us, welcome. And for those of you coming back, good to see you again. Every month at ASAP Now, we feature something for you on the podcast, either from the magazine or special podcast-only content. And this month, we are talking about something that makes me really nervous, which is critical care. Critical care is becoming more and more pervasive in ER practice, whether it's because of the great doctors who are now cross-training and fellowshipping from ER into critical care. The new models are happening at a lot of hospitals that are hybrid ER ICUs, or if it's because, well, critical care happens, whether because it's rolling in our front doors, which makes us really excited for great resuscitation, or because boarding is definitely happening across the nation for patients waiting for the ICU from the ER, or even for patients just waiting for an inpatient bed that end up decompensating during their really long boarding times in the ER. So we are really excited to bring to all of you at ASAP Now a brand new column that covers all things critical care that you need to know. And with us this month is the author of that column, Dr. Paul Janssen. So check it out.
Hey, everyone at ASAP Now, and thanks again for joining us. We have on the podcast today Dr. Paul Janssen, who is an assistant professor of emergency medicine at Harvard Medical School and works in the ED and ICU. And we have him joining us to talk about a new column at ASAP Now, which is critical care time. So, Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. I'm so glad to be here with you.
So, Paul, we were just chatting about this. Like, I love critical care and bringing it into the ED. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you started this column.
So I am board certified in both emergency medicine and critical care, having done a fellowship in internal medicine and critical care at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, which is where I now work. And I work both in the ICU and in the ED. So the goal of this column is really to bring those tips and tricks and the knowledge from upstairs and bring them into a form that everyone can use in the ED on the day-to-day basis when you get that unanticipated sick patient.
Yeah, I absolutely love that because we all know that there's, of course, the unanticipated sick patient, and then there's also the boarding in the ED for hours and hours and maybe days that becomes sick. So these tricks are so important for us to know about critical care, just practices that we have to bring to emergency medicine. So let's start right in. You opened us up on this column about push dose pressors. So I love this. But tell me, for our listeners, what is a push dose pressor?
So a push dose pressor, the way I think about it is any pressor that you give is a bolus. And so you can use it in a lot of different ways, but basically it's a way of getting those pressors into the system quickly in a way that really helps you out when you're in a bad spot. So when I think about when to use push dose pressors, there's really three main times that I think that they are really useful for the emergency physician. So the first is when you know that the patient might become hypotensive. So let's say you are going to do a joint reduction and you want to use propofol. You know propofol is a pretty potent vasodilator. So maybe you want to have a push dose pressor there just in case once you give the propofol, they become hypotensive. And the second time that I think about wanting to use push dose pressors in the emergency department is when you have a patient who is in front of you, sick, hypotensive, and you're waiting for the pressor. So maybe it needs to be mixed up in the pharmacy. Maybe you need the nurse to go get it out of the medication dispensing system. You can use push doses of that pressor while you're waiting for the bag to arrive. And then the final time that I think about using push dose pressors is when the patient is suddenly hypotensive in front of you and you need something right away, because you can really mix these up from ingredients that are in the code cart, which is within about, I think, 5 to 10 feet of us in the ED pretty much at all times.
So I think these are great scenarios that we use them in kind of patient types. I am really curious as to how you think about push dose pressors in terms of when do you as the physician mix it? Do you ask for pharmacy to mix it? I remember I read a blog, I think it was MCRIT when I was in residency, and I really got into it. So every shift I would mix a vial of push dose epi and just stick it in my scrubs. And I didn't use it, you know, most of the time, but I'm really curious
you looked
what you
really
think
cool
about
that.
So cool. And I labeled it. God darn it.
No, that's an awesome question because I think the biggest flaw with push dose pressors is that mixing them up is kind of risky. And I think especially so if you are doing it in a time when you're really stressed, because it's like you're multiplying by 10 and moving the decimal point two or three times. And so what I really advocate is working with your pharmacy to get pre-made syringes so that you can have them in the ED. You can just have it so you know what the standardized dose is. And there's actually been a lot of case reports where people will mix it up themselves. And maybe it's a stressful situation and maybe someone put something down the wrong way. And then a 10, 100,000 time dose gets given. So I'm a big advocate of actually getting them as pre-made syringes and ready to go. But you can always mix them up at the bedside, particularly if you can't get it from the pharmacy. And Epi would be kind of the classic example, which is probably the one that you're referring to.
Yeah, I love that because I could never remember the doses of the common ones. So I just remembered one and I always use Epi. But I think that brings me into my next question, which is you did a really good job, I think, detailing the four most common pressors used for this. So I would love if you would walk us through the doses, the benefits, or the pros and cons of using one versus the other and help us kind of decide on which medicine to use.
Absolutely. So there are two that I think are the classic in the ED, and then there are two that are emerging. And I think there's risks and benefits to all of them. And so we can kind of go through them one at a time. So the first one I think that people are probably most familiar with is epinephrine, just because we use it all the time in codes, and it's within 5 feet of you at every point in the ED. And so Epi is an interesting drug because it kind of has a lot of really mixed effects. It has a lot of alpha ones, so you're getting that vasoconstriction, and you're also getting that beta ones, so you're getting the chronotropy and the inotropy. So Epi is typically used at a 10 to 20 microgram dose. And so the way that I think about it is that basically for all of these, you're giving what you would give as a moderate rate of the infusion, just giving it all at once. So at our institution, the range for Epi is 10 to 20 mics per minute. And so you're giving just that minute dose as a bolus. And this is the one that you can mix up from the code card. So you have to do the math in your head, and it can be a little bit confusing, especially if you're stressed. But if you remember, that code dose syringe is 1 milligram for 1,000 micrograms, then you can take 1 cc of that Epi, which would be 100 micrograms, and then dilute that out in a 10 cc flush, and that would give you 10 micrograms per ml. So not that math that you want to be doing in an emergency, but that's the way you would mix it up. So Epi is great if you just want to kind of pick one thing that's going to be easy to use around and not cause too much controversy.
Is there any subtlety that if you give push dose Epi and they end up needing a drip, that you should also stick to Epi as a drip, or does it not matter?
No, I don't think so. I think the most important thing is picking the right pressor for the right patient physiology. And we can talk about that a little bit more. But if you just need something and you want to give a little bit of Epi while you're waiting for norepinephrine to arrive, I think that is totally fine.
Awesome. I love it. So what are our other alternatives?
The next one that I think is the most common in ED after Epi is phenylephrine. So phenylephrine, the anesthesiologists use all the time. You go to the OR, they push some propofol, and then they push a little phenylephrine afterwards to counteract that vasodilation. So this is used all the time, every day in the ICU and the operating suite. And I think we can definitely bring it to the emergency department. So in contrast to epinephrine, where you're getting a lot of that beta, the chronotropy, the inotropy, you're not getting any of that with phenylephrine. You're just getting alpha-1 agonism. So you're only going to get vasoconstriction. So it's really great for those patients that just need that. So maybe you have someone who's in atrial fibrillation with RVR. You want some afterload to help slow them down, and you don't want to give them even more of that beta-1 and make that RVR worse that you would get with Epi. So phenylephrine, I think, is a great choice for that type of patient, or someone who you're giving propofol to where you know it's a pure vasodilator. Just like Epi, the dose is right what you would give as the middle range of an infusion. So at our institution, it's typically like 10 to 300 micrograms per minute is the range that you give. And so most people will give like 100 micrograms at a time. This one, I think we don't really stock as the vials or as push dose syringes in the ED most places. So it's a little bit harder to mix it up yourself. But what we've done at our institution is we just have these pre-mixed syringes that the nurses can pull out of the Omnicell and give it to you. And if you look at the cup holders, along with all the pens that have been abandoned, there's usually a few syringes of the
Yeah, the last time I mixed fennel in the ED was probably for a priapism. And, I would love to hear your thoughts on levofed, which I know you talk about in the article, because that is so pervasive, in my opinion, as a presser in the ED.
Yeah, I love levofed. Now that's not just me as an intensivist talking, but I think it's really the best of both worlds. So I think levofed or norepinephrine has kind of is the really go-to presser of choice for almost every condition in the emergency department. Sure, you can, think of some times where phenylephrine or epi might be better, but most of the time, that presser that we're reaching for is levofed or norepi because it's really just a really well-balanced presser. You're going to get that alpha, but you're not going to get as much tachydysrhythmia as you may get with epinephrine. You're also going to get that beta. So it's really well balanced. So I think it's great because you don't have to think too much. You can just pick one and go with it. So with norepinephrine, I don't think there's as many people who have been traditionally using it in the ED, but there's a lot of reasons that it works well and has a really balanced side effect profile that you don't get with the other two. And so the easy thing to remember is that just like the others, phenylephrine and epinephrine, the dosing is right the same as that you're going to give as a continuous infusion. So at our institution, it's typically 10 to 30 mics per minute, and then you're going to give about 10 to 20 micrograms every several minutes as a bolus.
Got it. And lastly, you have vaso, which we don't use a whole lot. What are your thoughts there?
So I think vaso is typically, most of us will think about that as our second presser that you're going to. And so I think that it's probably the fourth push dose presser that I would think of in the emergency department. And a lot of the evidence is really more from case reports. But if you're in a spot where all you have is a bag of vaso, typically giving a unit of vaso is the proper dose. But I think right now it's really more of a case report usage in the emergency department. But I wanted to put it in there so people knew about it and were thinking about it.
Wonderful. And so if we really condense this discussion down to fennel, epi, and levofed as our major push dose pressors, can you walk us through either pros and cons or, which patient population to think of for each of these pressors? I know you already mentioned fennel balances well with propofol. Levofed's kind of never the wrong answer. Epi's just easy to mix. Could you help walk us through if all three are available and readily available, how do we make the decision?
Absolutely. So it really depends on the physiology of the patient. If you don't want to think about it, you are probably never going to be wrong if you use levofed. And the good thing about levofed is the bags of it to give as an infusion, most places are pretty readily available. So you can even draw it off of that bag and then just inject it right there. So pretty balanced, great for almost every use. And anytime you would think about using levofed for a patient, that's probably the patient that you can use it as a push dose. So sepsis, you can use it for AFib with RVR. You can really use it for almost anything. I think if we're going to think about the other two, the physiology comes much more into effect. And so I've actually seen this go really wrong. I had a patient that I saw during fellowship who was in the ED with cardiogenic shock. He actually had endocarditis and had a depressed EF, I think it was like 10 or 20%, was getting worse in the ED and got intubated with a push of phenylephrine. And so he actually coded after that because what this guy needed was a lot more of that chronotropin and inotropin because he was in cardiogenic shock. So those patients who need more cardiac output, those are the people that you might think of using epi for because it has more of that beta. But someone who needs more afterload or who has more of a vasodilatory state, that's the patient that I would think of using phenylephrine for.
Got it. And for fennel specifically, then, is that uniquely more likely, let's say, to induce a bad outcome on a patient like cardiac arrest, right? Because they're not getting enough squeeze. Is fennel, do you think, uniquely risky, or is it just that's so defined with that patient population because of the physiology?
No, I think it just really depends on the physiology of the patient. So just like you, that would be a great choice for with RVR, you might make things worse if you give epi with all of the beta one that you're giving. So it really just depends on the physiology of the patient, which one you want to reach for.
Got it. And I love this sort of conversation, especially with someone who practices in critical care, because I am not by any means a critical care expert, but I feel like when I'm in the ED, sometimes I just need a go-to. So my go-to from the discussion is levofed is never the wrong answer.
Yeah,
Or
exactly.
epi might be. So let's think about it before we go there. But if I had to go to my pharmacist and advocate for something to stock as a push dose, I'm feeling like levofed's the way I want to go.
I think so. But I think the biggest take-home message is get one that you're comfortable and just know how to use it. Because the time that you're reaching for it, generally something has gone wrong. And you don't want to be spending all that mental energy trying to figure out something new. So just figure out one. I mean, ideally, you'll get comfortable with multiple of them, but just start with one. Think about the pros and cons, get comfortable with the dosing, get comfortable with how your institution stocks it. Like there are lots of different doses and concentrations that you might see, particularly for phenylephrine. So the anesthesiologist may have 40 micrograms per 1 mL, 80, 100, and just getting used to what your institution is stocking and knowing exactly how much you need so that when you get into that really stressful situation, it just comes easily. I think that's the biggest take-home message.
And that's a great one for all of our listeners for sure. I think this is so helpful because it really gives us what we need to know to be able to implement this into practice on our next shift. I would love to close with some of the pearls and pitfalls, let's call it, on push dose pressors for any listeners to take away before they go and do this on their next shift.
So the biggest thing is know what's available to you, how it's formulated, and how to use it. And so know what those side effects are. The next take-home message is think about the physiology of the patient. If they need more inotropy, then might maybe think about epi. If they need more afterload, then maybe think about phenylephrine. If you don't want to think about anything or you're jumping on the norepinephrine bandwagon, then just go with that. So just think about the physiology of the patient before you choose. And then when you're dosing them, it's typically just the same as the average minute concentration delivered as a continuous infusion. So I think that is really the most helpful thing. And then trying to get into a situation where you're not doing math in your head, especially like moving the decimal point, because that's really a setup for error. So you definitely can mix up epi yourself from that code cart syringe, but just keep in mind that there's a lot of opportunities for error. And so if at all possible, get those pre-made syringes, work with your pharmacy colleagues to get them stocked in the ED.
I love that. And I wanted to make a mention because you do talk about it in the article. What kind of access is needed to do push dose pressors?
So I think this is another thing that's changed over time is it used to be that everyone who got any presser of any dose got a central line. And I think we are now realizing that that was probably not only overkill, but maybe dangerous for our patients by putting them at risk for these central line associated bloodstream infections. And so in the ED for low to moderate dose pressors of any sort, I think a peripheral line is totally fine as long as it's a large bore proximal, well-functioning IV. Of course, your institution may have different standards, but I think the evidence is pretty clear that for short-term and low-dose infusions of these pressors, a peripheral line is totally fine as long as it's working well and not a, positional 24 in the thumb. And so for the push-dose pressors, a lot of the times you're reaching for this because something has gone wrong and you need something really quickly. And so I think just using what you have, ideally it's a large proximal catheter, but you definitely don't need a central line for this. You don't need an IO for this. Just make sure it's a line that you trust. And I think it's totally going to be fine when you use it.
Awesome. This has, again, Paul, been so helpful, I think, for all of our listeners to be able to do this really on our next shift. I want to thank you again for joining us and for coming and do the podcast on the inaugural month of our new column, Critical Care Time. So thanks again, Paul.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Hope you all enjoyed our first installation of the Critical Care Time column, both in the podcast and in the magazine with Paul. Now, I know I took at least one practice changer, which is that levofed is never the wrong answer when it comes to pressors. So maybe it's time for me to change my go-to push dose from epi to levofed. Because as a non-critical care trained ER doctor, Sometimes the pathophys isn't glaringly obvious to me in the moment of decompensation or resuscitation, and I'd rather have a universal go-to in my toolkit personally. Now, critical care time will be a quarterly column in the magazine, so be sure to keep your eyes out for it. As usual, there is tons more in the magazine. And as a reminder, it's digital every other month, including this month. So check it out at asepnow.com. There's great articles on The Pit and one of the medical show consultants, Dr. Joe Sachs, pre-hospital buprenorphine, and a pro-con debate of a mandatory four-year residency, which is currently out of comment period and now pending ACGME's decision. And there is a great article on what to keep in your ER fanny pack, because yes, you have definitely seen them, but maybe like me, you haven't quite given in to carrying one yet. This tells you the top 10 things that you need to have. And of course, there is much, much more. As always, tweet us if you have an idea for us at ASAPNow, or feel free to tweet me direct at Amy Faith Ho. We would love to hear your thoughts and feedback and keep you tuning in. So thanks, everyone, and see you all next time.